This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 367 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
And I'm not, thank goodness for that.
No, you are not. You are Glyn Lavender from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au. How are you, my friend?
Next.
Right. You don't want to answer how you are, or you're not my friend?
Could I plead the fifth?
How's your week been? A bit rough, obviously.
It's been rough on the family front, but we won't go to there. It's just too depressing. Right. But on the photo front, not too bad. I popped down today and picked up the new Tamron 70-200 2.8.
I saw that.
From the lovely folk at Tamron. So I got lens number 413.
Nice.
If you go, for all the Hudo 70 they're going to make over the journey, yeah, it's quite a nice low number.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you wrecked it yet? Have you dropped it? Have you thrown it under a bus yet?
I haven't smashed it yet.
Well, that's a start.
I did, because I met the new national manager for product manager for Tamron in Australia. I met him today for the first time.
Cool.
And he goes, I like straight talking. Yeah, I like straight talk. I don't know the rubbish. I like to cut to the chase. Yeah, straight talking. So what is it you want? I said, I want all your lenses for free, and when I drop and break them, I want them replaced. I said, that's going to happen a lot. That's right. So, he knows where he stands.
And what are your initial thoughts on it?
I'm just going to drag it towards me. I've got it in my hot little hands right now.
Right.
As we speak, I'm laying on the bed. And it's sitting on my chest.
And he's fondling it.
No, it's no. You'd go there. Initial observations.
Yeah.
Well, here's it. So I've taken two photos with it. All right.
Right.
Two crap ones, but just literally aimed and point and press the button. I was really.
Have you got a gig with DP Review?
Yeah. DP Review, you mean?
Excellent.
Yeah, but my camera, the shutter's so sensitive that sometimes when you go press the button to focus, it shoots. I was just testing this focus speed.
Right.
I took one photo by mistake. But here's the thing, is I have really unsteady hands, right? I mean, seriously unsteady hands.
Yeah.
And this is a fairly heavy lens. It's an all-metal body. So metal body, 70-200, 2.8. It's going to have a bit of weight to it. Don't know how much, but a fair whack. So a heavy body, heavy lens. And I took a photograph at a quarter of a second at 200 mil handheld, by mistake, and it's almost usable.
Wow.
Now, I took that by mistake without really actually meaning to actually take a photo, so I wasn't trying to steady myself.
Yeah, right.
But this five stops of image stabilization looks like it could be pretty darn handy for someone like me with a bit of movement in the hands.
So that's in-lens stabilization?
In-lens, yeah, because it's not a Sony and it's stuck with the poor technology the body's got rather than the constantly developing technology in lenses.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's even remotely true, but it sounds good. Sounds like a good dig. So, yeah, at a quarter of a second, now, there's no way in the wide world of sports would I even normally be able to take a photograph, even if I was actually meaning to, at a quarter of a second, handheld at 200 mil.
No.
My hands are just not steady enough. And there's people out there who can.
Yeah.
And of course, we know which file we put them in. We hate people in that file. But so to me, it was pleasantly usable.
Yeah, right.
Or too hard. There's a tiny bit of movement in it, but not too chablis, as they say in France. And then the next thing I did, I simply stepped outside and photographed a end of a bit of tree, a bit of a little flowery, planty bit at the end of a tree.
Right.
That was moving in the wind, so it's a tiny bit blurry.
Yep.
But it was just to check out the bouquet in the background.
Yep.
And I've only got two words to say. Silky smooth. My
nice.
Goodness.
Nice.
The background is fabulous. It's like a Matisse painting.
So this was at the 200 end again?
200 end again, yeah. Yeah. Just some little twig flying out of a big tree in the front yard.
And and presumably you were near to the minimum focusing distance.
Yeah, very close. So I had to manually focus because it was a fairly wispy little thing and
right.
It was moving around the wind, and there's lots of bigger things behind it that were also moving.
Yeah.
So they're obviously going to pick up the lens's attention more than the smaller wispy thing in the foreground.
Yep.
And when we talk about foreground, background, I'm talking the difference between a foot
Right.
So it's like it's all dangly bits off the same branch.
Yep. Yeah, right. Yeah.
So it looks like a massive difference. So you can easily see why the autofocus would get confused.
Yeah.
And that's probably more a camera issue more than a lens issue anyway.
Yeah.
But its focus is super smooth. That one thing I did, I had a quick review, watch of somebody's review this week, The Angry Photographer or something. His name is.
I saw the link for it, but I didn't have time to go and watch it. Was it good?
Well, he might be angry because he had to pay for the lens himself.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
That would make me fairly cranky, I'd imagine. But one thing, so, because I haven't paid any attention to this lens, just knowing I'd have to look when to finally show it up. But one thing you pointed out was it's got three modes of image stabilization, which I kind of like.
Oh, okay.
So it's got your traditional constantly on image stabilization.
Right.
So yeah, as you're pressing the button, it's always active.
Yep.
You've got the other traditional one, which is the image stabilization is only active just as you're about to take the shot.
Right.
So it saves battery power, but also means you can't see the effect, but it saves battery power.
Okay.
But the third one, which I thought was pretty cool and quite useful and would have been something you would have liked a couple of years ago, is panning image stabilization.
Oh, nice.
So that seems like if you're trying to do that, there's motion shots and panning and following moving objects, the lens being aware of your motion, being aware of which is natural motion to achieve the result versus accidental movement because of instability. So that I'm looking forward to give that a bit of a try, I must admit.
That should
be, because quite frankly, I'm not very good at panning stuff.
Okay.
I get shots every time I mean to do it, but it takes a lot of shots for me to get a couple of good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, which I know I train people to do this stuff, and I say to them, look, the more you do it, and I use you as an example all the time, Bruce. I say, I've got a mate I do a podcast with. He's hopeless. He's a amateur photographer. Yeah. His photography makes his audio stuff look good, is what I say to them. I might not say this. No, but I say, look, I do a podcast with you, and I explain about the road rally, the off-road rally you did a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
The 11 days, and I said, I knew you'd, in the first day or two when you wanted to do some of these panning shots, your success rate wasn't high.
No.
But by your third or fourth day, it was better, and your fifth and sixth day, it was pretty darn good. And what was it like by the end?
Oh, nailing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So if you do this stuff a bit, you're going to get pretty darn good at it.
Yeah.
That's why you look at this shot of Usain Bolt at the last Olympics.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a panning shot. It's got the motion. Well, this guy does this all the time.
Yeah.
You know, he's very – so even though this guy's running pretty darn fast and you've only got a fraction of a second to get the shot, if you do it an awful lot, your success rate's pretty good.
Yeah.
And yet, remember, these guys are shooting at 10 frames a second.
Yes. Yeah.
So he's got probably – I'm going to say he's got 15 frames – of inside that window of where he'd been a good spot where panning would work well.
Yeah.
And of those 15 frames, he might have only got two or three good ones. But how many good ones did he need?
He only needs one.
That one that went viral, you know?
Yeah.
So panning image stabilization, I think.
That's very interesting.
Very interesting, yeah. But other than that, not a lot of other variations. It's got a closer focusing than the previous 70 to 200.
Okay. At the long end?
All the way through the range, I think.
Okay. Right.
But so therefore they've got a focus limiter on it now. So you can just do 3 meters to infinity or full.
Oh, yeah, cool.
It's very handy. I would,
the Sony lenses have had that for a while.
Yeah, look, a lot of other lenses do, but not necessarily in the 70 to 200 range. Like most macro lenses have that.
Oh, okay.
Because it's got such a bigger range of focus.
Yep.
Yeah, from half a centimeter to infinity. That's so much. So you often need a limiter there.
Yeah.
But most big 70 to 200s don't really need that because they're not doing an awful lot of that minimal stuff.
Yeah.
But so, for the sake of one extra switch, I would love a 3 meter down to minimum focus.
Yeah. Right.
Just to limit it in that short end.
Yes.
For when you are doing it, so if it does have to hunt, it doesn't have to hunt the whole way through the range.
Yeah.
But yeah, and to me, that's a no brainer to do that, and it wouldn't have been hard to incorporate that into the body. But
I absolutely concur with that because my Sony 70 to 200 2.8 has that exact same switch. And you're right, there are times when you wish it was just limited to the close
short
range.
End. Yeah. And it'd be very convenient, and I said maybe you wouldn't you get a little bit higher percentage of shots.
Yeah.
So the build quality is fabulous, and I don't use tripods much,
right.
But the tripod bracket on this thing, So the actual base that
this
you would
screw it on a collar to, around the lens.
So yep. On the collar, yep. But the actual place where you would mount the tripod is actually an Arca Swiss plate built into the collar.
Oh, it's not just a hole.
No. So if you happen to have an Arca Swiss head, which are the most popular heads on the market,
okay,
your lens can now slot straight in there without needing another plate.
Ah.
Which removes that one extra little bit of wobble. Yep. That one extra little flex point that yep. you wouldn't have otherwise. And you know what? It's so unobtrusive built in the mount that unless you knew what it was, you wouldn't know what it was.
Oh, okay.
You wouldn't know it's a plate.
But is there also a 3/8-inch hole threaded so that if you have one of the other types of plates, you can still mount it?
3/8, do you mean? The big ones?
Is it 3/16, is it? Sorry,
It's got the normal tripod hole. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, right. So it's got one of those as well.
There's two size holes. I can't remember which one's which.
Okay, so I thought the 3/8 was the size of the thread for tripods, but maybe it's not.
It could be. I wouldn't know. That's technical stuff. I never would have paid attention. But yes, it's got the norm, and that goes straight into it. So this Arca Swiss plate is just the actual collar is formed is
in
metal
the shape
formed.
Of yeah,
it's in
right.
shape of that collar. So it's got a normal hole. So as if any normal person using a tripod would not know what that was.
Right.
But if you happen to have one of those heads,
yep,
kabang, straight on you go.
Nice.
Pretty darn clever piece, a bit of idea if you ask me.
Yeah.
It's really sure. well thought out. So yeah, look. So first impressions. Dynamic. It feels awesome. And so having watched the reviews I'm not a pixel peeper, but all these people yep. out there, there's only one really good review out there at the moment, but he's tested it against the Nikon 70-200, right. their latest version.
Okay.
Which in the US is about 2,800, I think.
Yep.
And this lens is about 1,400.
Yep.
So it's a half price.
Half the price, yep.
It beats it for image quality. It beats it for image stabilization. It beats it for a whole bunch of stuff. It walks all over the Nikon. I mean, not significantly,
yeah.
but it's better and it's half the price.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I take all of those assertions that it's better image quality and it's better this and it's better that. I take all of that with a grain of salt, to be honest. I mean,
But what he's done, but by doing that, he's actually taking a whole bunch of photos with the 70-200 Nikon,
yep.
and a whole bunch of exactly the same photos with a camera right next to it of exactly the same object.
Oh, okay.
With the camera, exactly the same focal length, exactly the same everything else, and they're comparing image to image.
Oh, cool.
So that's
it's
a bit more
not purely subjective. There is a bit of objectivity
to it.
Exactly,
and it's not aiming at a resolution chart. He's actually taking some photos.
Yeah, nice.
And he goes and does stuff like he checks. Things like this performance in bright light versus the performance in low light for sharpness and detail.
Right.
Which is, and he says that the Tamron walks all over the Nikon for low light performance.
Nice.
But the Nikon's got slight more saturation in bright light.
Right.
The saturation, who cares? I found this with the 15 to 30 Tamron when I first got it.
Yep.
I found it a little bit flat.
Right.
And even on the back of the camera going, gee, that looks a bit flat, you know?
Yep.
But to me, it's a little bit like a RAW file, you know. You could add, it's not giving you that saturation artificially. It's your choice to have the level saturation. So I actually kind of like the slightly less saturated image.
I was going to say, if you're the kind of person like you who prefers to shoot JPEG, then you could just, you know, dial in a little bit of saturation in camera whenever you put that lens on.
Exactly. Even in camera, I could just, you know, go and pop a little bit in post later, but it's not already stuck on there maybe more than I would like.
Sure.
That issue with contrast and saturation can be a little bit over the top with some lenses.
Yeah.
Yeah. They try and make the photos look punchy because that's what the average person likes. Since I've been using the 15 to 30, I've come to like a flatter image.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, a bit more like it's a little bit more of an even starting point with the image.
Yeah.
You know, it's my decision what the image is going to look like rather than what the boffins thought when they coated the lenses or whatever.
Yeah, with my comment, I meant if you weren't planning on doing post, if you were aiming you know, straight out of camera, bam, you know.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you've got all those things like this portrait and landscape settings and custom settings where you could add, yeah, I want +2 saturation, yeah, +1 contrast or whatever.
Yeah.
And tweak it to your taste, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
So I've got a natural light portrait workshop this Saturday, so I'm going to put it through the paces there and see what I come up with.
And sell a few to a few unsuspecting customers.
Well, it's not available till next month, so, right. So I'll have to go a little bit easy on the sell. No, pre-orders. Pre-orders are fine.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, look, I don't get excited about gear.
No.
But I'm looking forward to seeing the. I mean, I like the old 70-200. It gave me some great results.
Yeah.
And if this thing gives me an even better result, I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to complain at all. Yeah. Yeah. So, overall, exceptionally good.
Nice.
So that was my initial, 5 minute. I mean, I spent most of my time doing this time lapse video more so than doing anything technical with it.
Oh, okay.
The time lapse unboxing.
Right. Okay.
I use my phone to do a time lapse to film me unboxing the 10 thing and then spinning the lens caps around in circles and doing other silly stuff. More so than actually looking at what the lens was like. But,
right.
That's still all fine and good. All fine and good. So what have we got on the platter this week? Do we have anything exciting?
Oh, a few bits and pieces. I came up with, I saw this on Facebook the other day. It's called the Under Horse Project. And this guy has had a bit of a personal project going for a while of shooting underneath cats when cats were on glass.
Yep.
Right? And he had the idea of, wouldn't it be awesome if you could do this with horses? Right.
You know, you got like a man with ambition, but couldn't he step up? Yeah, let's go for like poodles, then like a Great Danes, work his way up. Because straight from cat to horse, that seems a bit of a big jump.
Exactly.
I mean, imagine how much thicker the glass would need to be for starters.
Yeah. And he said he had to dig a 3 meter deep pit and put the camera on a tripod underneath, because he obviously wasn't going to go down there, because you don't want a ton of horse landing on you if the glass should happen to break. And he said, this was like the most ambitious personal project he'd ever done. He had a team of 40 people. I didn't actually get to see what type of glass he used, but obviously it would have to be seriously thick, well-tempered glass. And he got rubber horseshoes fitted to the feet of the horses so that their hooves wouldn't scratch the glass when they walked on it. And hopefully as well, the rubber on their feet would have given them, or on their hooves would have given them a little bit more traction. Because I'd imagine that horses probably wouldn't be real fond of walking on something like glass.
Yeah, you know, it's like cats and dogs have to walk across the floorboards.
Exactly, they just slide everywhere. So hopefully,
you could add some great funny photos.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's an interesting collection of images nonetheless.
Cool.
And then the link will be in the show notes for anyone that wants to check it out. There's horses doing all sorts of funny poses, and you can see that some of them are really looking at what's down below the glass, like they're intently looking.
Yeah, so, what the hell's that?
Yeah, exactly. So, I really like that. I thought that was something very different and certainly ambitious.
So the problem is, where's he going to go next?
Yeah.
Yes. You know?
Elephants.
If he's gone the puppy route, and he could have worked his way up, and then goats. I don't know, llamas.
Yeah.
He's really got to go to rhinos next, doesn't
that's
he?
It,
you
that's
know?
It. Elephants.
Yeah.
The next one was 10 incredible photos you won't believe are not photoshopped. Some of these didn't really make me think were photoshopped.
10. I'm already up to number 30.
Yeah.
And there's 17 pages. I'm only on page 3 of 17 pages.
Yeah.
So this 10 is just a little bit, limited.
But some of them are really good. I like the second one, the one of all the aeroplane reflections in the bubbles of water.
Yeah. It's pretty cool, especially if it's real. It might not be Photoshop, it might be GIMP.
There you go.
It's a technical loophole.
And I really like number 8, a man feeding swans in the snow, where I thought it was great composition. If you couldn't win a photography competition with that image, I don't know how you would.
Well, you have to be in something like portrait.
Black and white portraiture or something like that.
No, no, don't put anything that sights you obvious because that'll
it'll rule you out straight away.
It's it's something obscure like French literature department or something like that. You know, something. Oh, yeah, that's very cool. The man feeding the swans, that is very cool.
Yeah. So anyway, there's plenty
of all the ones I've seen so far. There's only one that I can say for sure. Yeah. Well, 99% sure that is photoshopped.
Yeah. What page are you on?
Page 2, number 15.
Right, which is the took this shot through the windshield of my car at a stop sign, but I had to get this picture.
Now, if you look at the power lines,
yeah,
see how strange they look.
Yeah.
That's a typical artifact of over HDR processing.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Yeah. So, but then again, you know, it could have been that the camera had built-in HDR. Or no, that's not true. The camera could have built-in bad HDR.
Yeah.
But there's definitely some.
I don't think that's in camera. I think that's some shoddy post work because, in between the power lines that are closest to the viewer.
Yeah.
You can see that in between the power lines, the sky is noticeably darker than just further away from that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so that looks like it's been
masked. And then there's a glow of light down the light pole itself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could have been the camera had built-in HDR and it does just a poor job. Because my Canon's got built-in HDR, and it does a poor job.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's possible, but, you know, we're getting a bit pedantic for saying it's had no processing when it's a multiple shot blended together in camera.
Yeah. I don't know about that one, but anyway.
There's nothing wrong with photos being photoshopped, you know, as long as we don't pretend they are not.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, anyway, there's an interesting collection of images there for anyone that wants to go and check that out. The third one I found was Lightroom. You're doing it all wrong.
Oh, that's nothing unusual.
Now, the reason I included this was because it has a fairly comprehensive guide to setting up your catalogs and understanding what Lightroom is designed to do beyond simple development of photos, like the more on the management side of things. So, I guess that was the reason I flagged this particular story, and you could probably find that kind of information anywhere if you went looking for it, but it just grabbed my attention through the week.
It's all in one spot. You know where it is. It's nice to share it.
That's exactly right. And the next one that I found was a video. It's just an infographic as a video, and this was on lensvid.com, and it was all about what went on in the camera industry worldwide in 2016. And
what went on?
A lot of the stuff that we talked about last week was kind of covered in this video, and that's sort of why I picked it.
They stole my ideas.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They heard the last episode and they went, we can make a great video out of that. anyway, it's a nice, pretty infographic with lots of charts and things, and yeah, so I thought I'd put that in there for anyone that wants to have a look.
Was it informative, though? Did it?
As I recall, it's a couple of days since I watched it. And it was only a couple of minutes long, so, yeah, it's not a huge investment of time to have a look through it. So, but you can do that later.
There's a 4% decrease in mirrorless cameras.
Yeah, which I thought was kind of odd.
I thought that was odd too, yeah. It's the first thing that stands out to me.
But I wonder, is that because Sony owns the majority of the mirrorless market and it was their plant that got hit with the shake-up from the earthquake? So,
do you think Sony owns the majority of the mirrorless market?
I would have thought so.
I wouldn't have thought so.
No?
I would say Fuji and Olympus probably had a bigger stake than Sony.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay.
All personally.
Right.
Okay. I'd be, who knows? But I would have thought the prevalence of Olympus cameras I see at workshops versus Sony is 5-1, 10-1.
Oh, I don't doubt that at all.
Yeah.
I just thought, And maybe it's just my bias as a Sony shooter, but I just thought that Sony seemed to have gone, you know, all in, like all chips on the table on mirrorless to a greater extent than I have seen from other manufacturers. But, I mean, you're much closer to it than I am. So
yeah, I mean, they may make a lot of mirrorless cameras, but if their share is not very large.
Right.
Yeah, no. Okay. So, I mean, but then again, I just saw this thing today that the share doesn't really matter, that Apple have 89% of the profit in smartphone business in the world.
Jeez.
But they have a 14% market share in sales.
Yeah, that's right.
So I don't know which one I'd prefer to have.
Yeah.
Selling an awful lot for nothing.
The thing with Android is that you've got so many manufacturers.
Yeah, it's spread out across so many brands. Yeah.
And the last thing that I wanted to contribute before we get to the stuff from our listeners was a quick follow-up on Peter Samble's contribution to the last episode about Affinity Photo. I said I would go off and have a look at this because, you know, I'm just, you know, keen to keep up with that sort of stuff. And what do I find? But Affinity Photo is made by a company called Serif. And I actually...
Oh, the Sans.
No.
Those people.
No.
Sans Serif. No Serif. No. I shot the Serif, but I did not shoot no deputies.
Not Sans Serif, just Serif. And I've had a long association with a Serif product called Page Plus.
Which, is that the font of all knowledge?
Nah.
Serif font?
It's Page Plus is their desktop publishing program. And it's sort of... A couple of steps up the rung from Microsoft Publisher. Like, it eats Publisher for breakfast, but it's not quite as intimidating.
What does it have for lunch?
It's
or
not,
nothing, because it's full.
That's right. It's not quite as intimidating as Adobe InDesign. So it's sort of in between those two. And I've used versions 3, 5, 8, and 11 of Page Plus over the last 20 years. And it's a great product, and I've long felt that Serif made really good stuff. So when I found that Affinity Photo was made by them, I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Now, Serif used to have a product called Photo Plus. And as you would imagine, it was another sort of Photoshop-like image editing program, but not as heavy a lifter as Photoshop. So I don't know if Affinity has grown out of the code that made up Photoshop or if it's a completely new product. But it's interesting that it's a no subscription model, as Peter suggested. You know, they've got an introductory price of, I think, £50, I think it is. I don't think it's $50. I might be wrong. But you can at least buy it outright. It's not a subscription model. It's dual platform, so it's Mac and PC, which is great. And it has the ability to open and edit and write back to the PSD format. So if you have, you know, in the past committed to Photoshop and, you know, like me, you've decided you want to, you know, cut ties with Adobe, you don't have to say farewell to all that work that you've done and saved in PSD format because Affinity Photo is able to open and edit and write back to that format. And obviously, if it can open those files, it would then be able to save those files into its own format, whatever extension that might be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thanks for the tip, Peter. It's not something I'm necessarily going to jump into because, as I said before, I'm all in on Linux these days, but certainly worth a look for anyone else that's looking to cut ties with Adobe, if that's your desire. It certainly looks like a great product. The introductory video looks amazing. Like, you know, the stuff that they're doing with it looks like it's right up in Photoshop's grill. So,
and from what I can see, it's going to be coming to iPad soon.
Yeah,
and you can use the stylus on it and paint straight onto the iPad on your photo editing. So,
gotta be loving that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool indeed.
So, Every Man and His Dog told us this week about the demise of popular photography and the website that goes with it, Pop Photo, after 80 years. I think Steve Peters contributed this, Glenn contributed this, Adam contributed this. I think you'd had to have been not paying attention to have missed this story this week.
Well, it's a big thing because, you know, it's the end of another... part of our industry, a traditional part of our industry.
So am I right in thinking that popphoto.com was simply the website for the magazine?
There's Popular Photo, and they had American Photo, which I think stopped publishing a few years ago and went to a web-based content place, and I think that's going as well. And there was another magazine they were shutting down at the same time as well. So
wow.
Yes, their entire empire effectively is no more.
Pretty sad.
Yeah, it is. But I mean,
it's just the sign of the times, isn't it?
I don't. But also, I don't understand photo magazines.
On the web or as a print media?
Go to an old bookstore somewhere.
Yeah.
And try and find a bunch of photo magazines from, say, 1976 as an example. And you'll find issue one for the year is black and white landscapes. Issue two, portraits and natural light. Issue three, how to get the best out of color landscape. And then you go to 2016. They're still doing the same bloody articles.
Right.
It's the same stuff over and over and over and over.
Right.
Which I get because there's only so much you can talk about. But, you know, at some point, the volume of the business has got to be reached some saturation because, you know, everyone's got the same, talking about the same stuff. And
okay.
Yeah, speaking of, my article in Better Photo Magazine comes out this week. It's on natural light portraits, which no one's actually knows. It's on LED lighting, this one.
Right. Well, I was just about to say, like you say, you know, go back to, say, 1976, for example.
1975.
The interesting thing, if you were to look at the landscape photography articles from 1976, which I have not done, and you were to compare them with the landscape photography articles of 2016, 40 years later, I reckon you would notice a lot of differences. Well, maybe not a lot, but certainly
you
some.
You would see a lot of difference in the post-production because they're so over the bloody top these days.
Yeah. Images. But things like 10-stop filters, like there were nobody was using 10-stop filters in 1976.
Yeah,
I don't even know if anyone had made one by that stage.
Didn't we just put gaffer tape over the lens and to put like a hole in there, make it a pinhole camera?
But I get what you're saying.
They rely on the same. It's almost like the same formula still.
Yeah.
We're introducing some new products, and we're post-processing the living daylights out of our photos, so they look absolutely nothing like the location we were actually taking photos of.
Yeah.
But then again, you look at the darkroom stuff they did back in those days, and they're pulling out stuff that was never to be seen either.
Right.
Photos. So there's that. I don't know. I just think I can see why people aren't going out and buying them. A, because there's so much information freely available on the internet.
Yep.
Yeah. On the subject that you're interested in at the moment, that you're interested in it.
Yeah.
Oh, gee, I'd like to find something out about the next topic on our list, a lighting tutorial. Bang, there we go. And there's so much information out, and whilst you're in the mood to learn it, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Versus waiting 6 months for the issue that comes out, it's going to talk about the thing you're interested in. You know?
Yeah, long after you've lost interest in it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Long after maybe the shoot that you needed to know the information for has been and gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more than just the fact that they can't get enough advertising revenue, and it's simply the way we absorb information is so different now, you know.
Yeah, and I'd hate to be trying to sell advertising for any kind of print media these days.
Yeah,
that would be such a tough barrow to push. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, I work for the Australian Radio Network, who are now a wholly owned subsidiary of Australian Provincial Newspapers. And we had a big all-staff get-together and drinks this afternoon in Sydney, and it involved staff from all of our businesses, not just ARN, but all of the other companies that APN owns. And yeah. The CEO of APN was saying, that over the last 3 to 4 years...
The CEO from ARN was saying, OMG, is that what you're saying?
No, the CEO of APN, our parent company, was saying that over the last 3 or 4 years, they have divested themselves of every tie to print media. We now have no print media, assets whatsoever in our family of companies. Because they see it as a dying industry. So they flogged off all those bits and, they're all in on radio and digital and, all that sort of funky stuff. So, I'd hate to be trying to sell print media advertising today.
Sure, wouldn't be easy, would it?
No.
Yeah. And a lot of this sort of stuff is like, so I do articles. for free to get free advertising.
Right.
So they get content for free, so they're not having to generate, not having to pay for content anymore.
Yep.
And I'm sure a lot of the content in most photo magazines these days is on that sort of model. They're not paying anyone to do the information for them anymore, because there's no money. Yeah. And therefore, all they could do is put out maybe a page for each contributor.
Yep.
And then they kind of get little bits of information here and there, a little bit from subscriptions, and away they go, you know.
Right. So you get like a full page ad for CPW in exchange for an article.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Nice. The next story, as Glenn just alluded to, from Steve Peters, was a Broncolor lighting tutorial. What I like about this particular site, and thanks, Steve, for sending it in, is they've got a whole bunch of really nicely shot images, and you can click on each one, and it then shows you the lighting setup that was used to create that image, which I think is great. Cool. Yeah, for anyone wanting to, you know, get their head around, you know, how to do product photography or how to, you know,
how to photograph a dead snapper on a piece of ice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's really nice. So thank you, Steve. I shall have a look at that when I get a chance.
That's an awful lot. They've got one, two,
They've got lots of images.
Five. No, they've got six different lights to photograph this one dead fish on ice.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's a lifestyle choice.
Yes, that's right. But there is a heap of images there. You know, if you're planning on doing anything with, you know, studio lighting or off-camera flash or whatever, there is bound to be at least one image in there that's going to be somewhere in the vicinity of what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Go find it and have a look at what they used and how they set it up and angles and distances and heights and all that kind of stuff. That's a great resource.
It's an excellent resource.
Sorry?
It's an excellent resource. Yes. Nicely done, Mr. Broncolor.
Yes. The next one that Steve sent us is 11 photography books that new students must read. So David Marlin, the gauntlet has been thrown down. So I haven't had a look at any of these books, but there's a good list of books there and covering most of the, you know, main genres of photography, if you like. So check it out if you're not yet satisfied with the list of books reading. David
is... You don't buy magazines anymore, so you must have go out and...
Right. Yeah, and I haven't had a chance to look at this last one, Why Photographers Don't Get Modern Art. But Steve said, another story for Glenn to nod off to. Have you had a chance to look at this?
No.
Are you going to?
Why Photographers Don't Get Modern Art. Here we go. Let's have a little quick gander. Because it's a white frame with some black box with some question marks in it.
See, that's not even a photo. Well, I suppose it might be.
It says about modern art. It doesn't have to be a photo. It didn't say it's not modern photography. It's modern art.
Yeah, okay. Two fossils. Nice. Oh, I love it.
So that's a pun.
That's nice.
It's a pun. Cool. Anyway.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to.
Yeah. Anyway, that's thank you, Steve. That one's there for anyone that wants to check it out. Adam sent us sample footage. See, Laowa, I assume that's how they pronounce it. Their super weird macro lens in action. This was hosted on Petapixel, but a link to a YouTube video. And the video is only 2 or 3 minutes in length, but this is the weirdest looking lens. It looks like a rifle barrel and is almost as long. It's probably about 80 centimeters long, looking at it compared to the size of the camera body. And what's the length of this thing? 24 mil F14 relay lens. I don't know what a relay lens is. Is that something you're familiar with, Glenn?
No.
But apertures from F14 to F40, and the video shows them shooting video with this macro lens, and wow, they get right up close to fish and to bees buzzing around on flowers, and yeah, it's very interesting looking.
Very bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, but does a great job, like being able to get that close to a bee as it's, you know, pollinating a flower.
Yeah,
without getting stung.
That's because you're 3.5 feet away yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
All the lenses.
That's right. This next one, every man and his dog was posting this week.
It was going everywhere, wasn't it?
I know. And this was when a camera's frame rate is synced to a helicopter's rotor. And I think we've seen a story very similar to this in the past. Yeah. And I think we've covered it. So, again, that link will be in the show notes for anyone else.
It's pretty freaky, though.
Oh, it is. It is.
It's very bizarre.
Next one was the story behind an action photo that won Red Bull Illume. Now, I don't know that this is actually an action photo, but, did this have something to do with a guy riding a bike across the arch? I missed that part of it. I only saw the bit about people photographing the arch. This is an arch in a park in Germany, and apparently there are signs saying nobody is allowed to cross the arch.
And this can I just say something bizarre about this arch?
Okay.
This arch was in the 10 photographs you won't believe weren't photoshopped.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, can you believe that? That's kind of funny. Just to throw that out there. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, so apparently, I see. There he is. There's a guy on a push bike on the top of the arch.
Yeah, on the top doing a wheelie.
Yeah. So again,
tosser.
Photographers acting irresponsibly.
No, that's not true. It's a push bike guy acting irresponsibly, and someone happened to take the photo.
Bollocks.
That would be my defense.
Yeah, I just happened to be sitting here when he did it.
Yeah.
Next one was another big camera store closing, and this was a showcase photography and video in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, I know Bob.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I know most of these guys in the US.
Right. Okay.
So another 40-odd year long store going out of business.
Yeah.
And here's the funny thing about a lot of these stores. It's not just it's the owner going out of business. Some of these guys have been working at these stores for 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're institutionalised, like as if you're in prison. So, I mean, how do you go and get another job after you've worked in the one place for 25 years or whatever?
Yeah.
It's just completely, you know, doing the head in, you know?
Yeah.
And America has it. Okay, we have a problem here in Australia where people buy stuff in from overseas. There's no tax if it's under $1,000, but realistically they hardly ever claim it over $1,000.
Yeah.
So a store is already 10% behind the eight ball, even without anything other factors take into account.
Yeah.
But America has it even worse. If it comes in from the next state, which could be as far away as 5 miles away from your house,
yeah.
they don't have to pay tax. So the store doesn't have a chance because they can simply get it in and bang, not pay any sales tax, and they're 8 or 9% behind again straight away, you know?
And if you're an American who's in that position where you can avoid the state sales tax, you're in an even better position than Australian consumers buying on the grey market via the internet.
Still getting a Canon USA product.
With a
Canon USA warranty, absolutely.
And should something go wrong, you can just take that 8 mile drive across the border back to the store you bought it from.
And this is the other thing is the way the US runs a lot of their sales are very different than they do over here in Australia, where there's this thing called instant rebates. So let's say you're buying a $2,000 camera, and there's an instant rebate of $300 off the price.
Right.
Okay. So you go into the store, instead of spending $2,000, you walk out, you spend $1,700 because the rebate's instant. We're here in Australia, when they do rebates, you've got to send a form off to Canon, and in a couple of weeks' time, Canon put the money into your account.
Yeah.
So the difference is the store loses that $300.
Yeah.
For as long as it takes for maybe the promotion to run.
Yep.
For whatever. They could be out of pocket for months.
Yeah.
And if you times that by, I don't know, 30 or 40 cameras times $200 or $300.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you're at an awful stack of money that you need to pay bills and wages and everything else.
Yep.
And you're kind of stuck. And then they don't reimburse the full money.
What?
They say, oh, look, it's we're taking 20% of this rebate as our marketing fund fees.
Are you kidding?
So you get 80% back. So you're coughing up that extra rebate. And you're probably going to be hassled on price in the first place anyway.
Yep.
Then you've got to do the rebate. Then the manufacturer doesn't give you all your money back 4 months down the track after you've done it. No wonder they're going out of business because there's no cash flow.
Yeah.
It's and this happens all the time. So
yeah, right.
So yeah, unfortunately, you can certainly see why a lot of these stores have lots of struggle. You know.
Yeah.
And I must also say, yeah, a lot of US stores, their product mix does baffle me somewhat when I see some of the stuff they sell.
Oh, in what sense?
Oh, just some of it can be cultural things, like just some of the products seem really hokey to me, really kitsch.
Okay.
Now, that's not saying there's not a market for it there. There could be what their customer base is like. But I've seen lots of old stuff and stuff that I don't see how they're generating what. Yeah. When I used to run a photo retail store here, every square foot of space had to justify its return.
Right.
If you had products in this square foot of real estate, well, what was it bringing back into the business? Because you couldn't afford not to do that, especially in Australia where leasing costs for buildings are so high.
Yeah.
You've got to have a return on the investment of whatever's in some of the space.
Yeah.
Now I see some of the stuff that's taking up large areas in stores in the US and go, well, how is that possibly generating income to justify that space?
Yeah, right.
And is there more dynamic and more interesting products that could be in that space which would bring people in and, you know, generate more money, you know?
It's interesting with a store like Bob's that's been there for 40 years. Is he paying rent on that space or does he own the building?
Well, it could be his own building or he could be leasing it, yeah.
Which kind of brings you around, well, you know, if that's the case where he owns the actual building, then he doesn't quite have that mindset of making every square foot
Earn
its pay, you know? Earn its existence, if you like.
Yeah. But what you'll find is the stores, though, that do that are the ones who aren't going out of business.
Right.
And I'm going to say a lot of stores are borderline going into business because they've lost their heart. They've lost their drive. And you know, I know a guy who was a marketer to photo. He'd go in there and build business plans for photo retailers and build strategies to make money. And he couldn't get off their bum and even wipe down a shelf with some dust on it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they're just destroyed. And then or they're so busy because there's no staff anymore. They're running around just doing the basic just running of the store without any of the potential to try and generate anything new or something interesting. You know?
Yeah, right.
So it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and for an awful limited return.
Yeah,
you can see why people kind of give up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
the next story that Adam sent us is Hollywood's greatest trick. Not quite sure this is photography related. It's sort of more videography related, I think. But if I understood it correctly, this is all about just how much CGI is in all of the films that, you know, make up the top 10 of the highest grossing films for the year.
Yeah.
And, you know, the...
Hang on a sec. You're telling me that's the Star Wars movie wasn't really done in space.
No, if James Cameron had shot it, yes, it would have been, but it wasn't. And, of course, there's all of the, you know, related hoo-ha about the graphic artists who do all of these visual effects not being remunerated fairly, or at least that's their perception, and the, you know, sort of the ongoing struggle between the visual effects artists and the studios for fair pay.
Look at this, though. You look at the Captain America Civil War, the number of video effects credits, 1,145.
It's insane.
It's not a lot of people working on it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, 1,242 people involved, yeah?
Yeah.
That's, I mean, the lowest ones are 109, and that's an animated show.
Yeah.
You'd think animated would be the one that had the most visual effects, but no.
What I find interesting is that Finding Dory, which is, you know, obviously the follow-up to Finding Nemo, 139 is, you know, the second lowest number of visual effects, you know.
Both animated. So the animated ones have the least amount of work involved with the effects.
Or the least number of people anyway.
Yeah, good point.
It's probably because those people are up to speed on three or four different effects packages, like software packages, and so they're able to wear more hats in the process.
Yeah,
I guess, where your Captain Americas and your Star Warses and all that, I guess people have more singular tasks within the overall production.
Anyway, crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting info though, Adam.
Yeah. And Carl sent us a link to it's a video on Facebook, but it's not actually video. It's a 360-degree street view-like underwater image. Basically, it's all about these guys who thought that it would be pretty novel to create these 360-degree panoramas underwater, which is pretty amazing. I don't know how they've done it because they've got fish completely frozen in space in the whole 360-degree.
Hang on a second. They're not in space.
No.
They're in water.
Three-dimensionally, they are in a space. That space might be water, but it's still a space. And there's no shearing between overlapping images, like you quite often see in Google Street View. Very interesting. Thank you, Carl.
Now, Carl did send us one other one, which you haven't got on the list there.
Oh, what is that?
It's the IRIX 11mm lens.
Oh, can you send me that link?
So I'm just going to send you the link there. There it goes. Which looks pretty cool. Wouldn't mind having to play with that.
Yeah?
Because 15 mil is just not wide enough, And I've got just a couple of bits of piece. We'll just whip through quickly, I think. And thought, did I have anything interesting? No, that's not interesting. They've got that already. Oh, for anyone who's got a drone, skypixel.com has and lives in Australia. They're doing an Australia from Above photo competition.
Right.
It'll be a bit of a challenge to get out there and drone to do something interesting with your drone.
Okay.
Now, speaking of drones, I did happen to go across this thing on DP Review or D Preview about this the Air Selfie, this little mini selfie drone.
Right.
I didn't really look at the drone. I just looked at the comments from people who entered. It's the stuff like, time for me to announce my Air Selfie Swatter on Kickstarter. Or you can just put your camera on a tripod and take the photo with a 10-second timer. 3 minutes, because this thing's got 3 minutes of runtime per charge.
What?
I'm not going to give you an awful lot of stuff. I'll wait for a full frame sensor version. I love creamy backgrounds. It may be small, but if it hits a skyscraper at just 2% of light speed, it would pulverize it into dust. And then they go on to the what energy source it would require to make the drone travel that speed, and how that would fit onto the drone. The comments are great, so it's definitely worthwhile. Definitely worthwhile going through and have a bit of a laugh at some of the funny people on our planet.
Right,
which is pretty good. And I saw this thing on a Facebook group on my day. Some woman put a post up asking for advice.
Right.
That she'd been contacted. This is for Australian photographers. Been contacted by a television production company.
Right.
Wanting to feature her in a documentary on Australian photographers with three other photographers. And they want to come to her. She's a wedding and baby photographer. They want to, or family photographer. They want to come along and film her doing a wedding. And they want to come along and film her doing a family session.
Right.
And all she has to pay is basically $6,000 for the privilege.
What?
And they'll come along and film her and these other four photographers, these other three photographers, so four in total. And it goes on some Foxtel channel, which is our pay-per-view channel. So, but it's one of these obscure channels, not one of the big ones.
So essentially you're just buying a video advertorial for yourself.
Yeah, for only $6,000. And they're calling up, and a couple of people said, I got a phone call from them the other day, and I said no. And all this, so they're obviously doing the rounds, calling people up, they're trying to get different people in each state, and who knows how many times they're planning on doing this, which I thought was interesting. So the last two things, so my battery's going to go flat, I reckon.
Right.
Four lighting principles. You know how I love my numbers of things, 10 best, four best. The four lighting principles I wish I'd known when I started photography.
Right.
And this is really simplistic stuff.
Okay.
It's the nuanced stuff. So I kind of like it because it's simple but easy to miss.
Okay.
So stuff like lighting principle number one, the subject is the brightest object in the photo.
Yep.
Okay. Number two, your photo should be free of overexposed highlights in the background.
Yep.
Okay, good stuff. Number three, the photo should not have any erratic shadows.
Right.
But by erratic is just odd, weird, badly placed, distracting shadows versus ones that do cool, interesting shapes and leading lines or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But, depending on the palette you're working for the image as to what kind of shadow we're talking about.
Yeah, so in an architectural context, shadows can be fine.
Exactly, but in some portraits, a bad shadow in the background, because remember, a shadow is black.
Yeah.
Black has more mass than light.
Yeah.
So it's heavier. So if you've got a black shadow, lumpy something in the background, that's got a lot of weight to it, and right. it's going to take some of the balance out of the image.
Yep.
And then just the basic number four, eyes in photographs should have a catchlight.
Yeah, right.
Just really simple little tweaks.
Yep.
Between one, two, three, and four of these things, I see in almost everyone's pictures put online going, oh, what do you think of my portrait? I'm just learning.
Yeah.
And I'll see these same things repeated over and over, mistakes, but these same factors to take into account to whether they're doing good things or bad things to your photo.
That have all been ignored.
Yeah, but so it's not necessarily bad.
Yeah.
There's no rules, but it's an awareness of it.
Right.
I'm aware it's there and I like what it's doing rather than, oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean, which is a very different thing.
Yeah.
So it's an awareness thing more so than anything else.
Yeah, right.
Nice. And the last thing I came across is finally someone's come out with a digital back for their 35mm SLR camera. And they've modified a Sony camera and glued it in the back of his SLR. I love it. So it's a DIY project if anyone's out there wanting to do it.
That is crazy.
Funny stuff. People are great. I love people who just go, I'm just gonna go with the stupid idea and I'm gonna make it work. Yeah.
Well, let's face it, what have you got to lose by having a crack at it?
Right. I mean, if it's an old camera, digital, an old camera film that you're not using much of anyway, exactly, yeah. Why not? You know?
Yeah.
That's why I say if you've got an old SLR laying around and don't use anymore, go get it converted to infrared if it can be.
Yeah, right.
And go and play with it as an infrared camera because that's so much fun to play with.
Yeah, right.
All of a sudden, your entire world is completely different looking. And that's kind of fun, you know?
Yeah.
So if you're a bit jaded in your photography and you've got an old five-year-old SLR that you just don't use because you've upgraded 17 times since then to get better stuff,
yep.
Convert it and go and play. It's great fun.
Nice.
So that's it, my friend. That's all I got.
Excellent.
Next week, a full and by full and in depth, I mean I'll brush over my review of the 70-200 2.8 G2 from Tamron.
So you haven't finished talking about it?
No, next week I'll have actually taken the proper photos with it.
Fair enough.
A bit of feedback and what I think.
Excellent.
All right,
mate.
Well, having said that, let me say this. Goodbye.
See you, mate.
Bye, everyone.
And that should just leave us with David Marlin's book review. Photo Wisdom. Sounds interesting. Take it away, David.
Thanks, Bruce. Photo Wisdom, Master Photographers on Their Art, is an interesting book by Lewis Blackwell. Essentially, this book features interviews and photographs with 45 contemporary photographers. For a start, there's no context on who the photographers are, just a name and straight into an interview. There's 1 to 5 beautifully produced photographs, plus the interview itself, with the photographers speaking in the first person about their art. The photograph collections range from amazing, confronting, to amusing, but they all, without a doubt, bring a new perspective to their subjects, whether the subject be rare or commonplace. Now, some of the photographers are fairly well known, like Andrew Zuckerman, and the collection here features photos from his Creature, Bird and Wisdom collections. There's Tim Flatch with a couple from his Equus book, plus a couple of animal portraits that are taken from unusual animals and get you thinking. Art Wolf with his abstracts and David Dublay with some superb above and below water scenes. But there's plenty more. David Chappelle has amazing images that are modernized versions of Renaissance masters and their style. Edward Bertinsky disturbs you with photographs of deep quarries like the Super Pit at Kalgoorlie, an old tyre pile, and an aluminium recycler's. One that caught my sense of humour was a rather different perspective on things by Elliot Irwin. One of his photographs shows an art class sketching a model, but the model's clothed and all the artists are naked. Another of his, which is entitled New York City 1946, depicts the world from a dog's eye level, and a small dog at that. There's plenty to look at, there's plenty to read, and there's lots to think about. But there's more. Just reading from the blurb. From the inception of Photo Wisdom, we wanted to demonstrate the practical value of photography, its power to make a real difference in our lives. When we came across the Photo Voice organisation, we saw a way to make our concern forward and extend this project into greater benefits. Photo Voice is an award-winning charity that brings about positive social change for marginalised and minority communities by providing them with photographic training. This enables the communities to better advocate, express themselves, and generate income. Photo Voice projects span four continents, supporting refugee groups, street children, orphans, the homeless, HIV/AIDS sufferers, and special needs groups. So, in purchasing the book, you contribute to all of that. Now, I found this a little bit tricky to find on Booko, even though I actually have got two editions. One I had bought a couple of years ago and another given to me recently by a well-meaning relative. Photo Wisdom, Master Photographers and Their Art by Lewis Blackwell. I found it, the 2009 edition, which is a large format hardback on Amazon, and they have a few left at $31. There's a 2015 edition, which is a much smaller format, also hardback, and I found that for $25 in Dimmicks. Again, Booko didn't have a listing for it, which is rare. Oh, and I had a look at PQ Blackwell's, the publisher's page, and they've got a new website under construction, so there wasn't much help there. And for those that really like to get the context of things, there's a short 100-word context about each photographer in the appendix, but really, leave that till last. Cheers.
Excellent. All right, well, that will do it for another week, and until we speak with you again, take care.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.